Genesis chapter 19 is where we are. Okay, well, as we've gone through the book of Genesis, what we found out a few things anyway about cities. And, of course, Genesis chapter 19 deals with Sodom and Gomorrah. So what we found out about cities that men have tried to build so far, just sort of a recap as we've gone through the book of Genesis. In Genesis 4:12, we find that Cain, who's a vagabond, he builds the first city, and he names it after his son. Genesis 4:17, Cain knew his wife, she conceived, and bare Enoch, and he built a city called after the name of the city, after the name of his son Enoch. So rather than honoring God, he honored his son. That wasn't a very good start. And, of course, God, after the flood, commanded men to spread out and populate the entire earth. When men do the exact opposite, they gather together and huddle in one place and decide to build a city and a tower. And, of course, that being the city of Babel. And in Genesis 11:4, they said, "Go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. Let us make us a name, lest we be scattered upon the face of the whole earth." So men are doing the exact opposite of what God had in mind, and so God has to scatter men abroad on the face of the earth. We move forward into Genesis 12:1. Abraham is commanded to leave his urban setting, the city of Ur, and to go and wander around as a wanderer in a land that God's going to show him. Genesis 12:1 says, "Now the Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, into a land that I will show thee." So Abram's told to get out of the city and live the life of a wanderer. And, of course, Lot, he was Abram's nephew. He chose to live in Sodom. Well, as we're going to find out in chapter 19, he's about to lose everything, including all his possessions and even family, because he has chosen Sodom as a place to dwell. Looking ahead into verse 28 of chapter 19, this, of course, Abraham, he looked towards Sodom and Gomorrah and toward the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. So that is what's going to occur with Sodom, where Lot was dwelling, and the rest of the cities of the plain. So it doesn't bode well for city life as far as the Bible is concerned. The problem isn't really with a city, it's with the hearts of men, though, as you're going to find out. People can have problems inside of a city, but they can also have problems once they, outside of the city, no matter where they're at. So, the events concerning Lot are no doubt tragic, and not becoming a believer of God. And as we go through chapter 19, we're going to find out a lot about Abram's nephew Lot. We've already read some things about him, and he's made some poor decisions, no doubt about that, and some selfish decisions, no doubt about that also. And there's going to be some things coming to really call into question as to whether he's in fact a true believer in God. And fortunately for us, that question is answered by Peter. So we can put our minds to rest as to where Lot stood in the eyes of God. Here in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 7, 8, and 9. Peter answers the question that God delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. And the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the righteous unto the day of judgment to be punished. So when Peter says that, he answers the question that God counted Lot as a righteous man, and he had a righteous soul, and he was delivered out of the temptation of the out of the wicked. So we shouldn't be the one to pass judgment on Lot, but there's going to be a lot of things that we can learn from him and from the things that he does and from the actions that he takes. There's no doubt about that. If we look at real quickly at the book of Job, chapter 29, in verse 7, we studied the book of Job, and Job was an important man at one time, and he held what was called a judgment seat when he was an important man in the city, and what that entailed was a seat at the gate of the city. Job says in Job 29:7, "When I went out to the gate through the city, when I prepared my seat in the street." And then he goes on to explain what he did. He passed judgment and so on and so forth on people and helped people, whatnot. And it seems that Lot held a similar position there in Sodom, probably because of his association with Abraham. He was the nephew of Abraham, and Abraham, his fame reached pretty far and wide. Well, first of all, he was a believer in God, and God seemed to have given Abraham a lot of favor. Abraham also, if you remember, because of his military conquest, that fame went far and wide also. So, Lot was able to sort of play off of that and take that with him and say, I'm the nephew of Abraham and use that for his advantage. Well, so that's the position that he seemed to have held there in Sodom. And he is at the gate of the city. And as we pick up the story then in Genesis chapter 19, verse 1, "And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground." Now, remember in chapter 18, these two angels are men. And as angels usually do in the Bible, they appear as men. So there's no doubt about it. Lot has no idea that these are angels, but just figures that they're men, as you and I. And Lot says, "Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early and go on your ways." And they said, "Nay, but we shall abide in the street all night." In other words, they didn't want to take advantage of Lot's hospitality, which would not have been terribly unusual. If you look at Luke 24, 28, 29, there you find a good example. They drew near unto the village whither they went, and he made as though he would have gone further, but they constrained him. In other words, they said, "Please stay with us," saying, "Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent." And so he went to tarry with them. So it would not have been unusual for a journeyer or a stranger to whenever the urge came, lay down in the street, find a dwelling place by a tree, unroll your bedding and lay down and go to sleep. So this is what the two men who were angels planned on doing. But Lot obviously feared for their safety with good reason, as it's going to turn out. And he did more than just say, "Please come in," but rather in verse 3, he pressed upon them greatly. So he was pleading with them and insisting, in other words. And they turned in unto him and entered into his house, and he made them a feast. And he did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. So the unleavened bread, he knew they were on a journey. So the unleavened bread, of course, that would be something you would eat when you're in a hurry. And so he did not take the time to make something that took a lot of time. But the unleavened bread was something that they could whip up in a hurry because it was far into the evening. But apparently somebody else saw the strangers enter into the city. And this word traveled fast. amongst the men of Sodom. And, well, a lot of men gathered at Lot's house, outside of the door of Lot's house, and they were desirous of the two men that Lot was hosting, that they would come out. Now, there's no other way to say it politely other than to say that the men of Sodom were homosexual in orientation, and that their desire was not a kind one, but that the text of the Bible indicates that what they were really wanting was not a loving relationship with these two men, but rather that they wanted Lot to turn these two men out so that they could gang rape them. That's exactly the indication of the text. And as you read the next two verses, 4 and 5, you'll see that that is exactly that which was the indication. Genesis 19, 4 and 5. But before they lay down, the two men, of course, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round. In other words, they surrounded the house, both young and old. So there was young men there, there were old men there, of all ages, all the people from every quarter. So from all over the city there was men of all ages, and they called unto Lot and said unto him, "Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them." And it's not that we might meet them, not that we might greet them, not that we might know what their names are, but know them in the biblical sense. And we're not, you know, we're adults here, and there's only so many ways that men would know other men in the biblical sense, and that's exactly what we're talking about here. There was multiple men outside and two of them inside, and as I say, it was not going to be a loving relationship in any sense of the matter. The next event is a strange event. And it reveals something about Lot that is it's extraordinary. It is extraordinarily revealing. Lot is very much like a lot of Christians today. What we're going to find out about Lot is Lot gets saved from the destruction of Sodom. Most people know the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and Lot gets saved from the destruction of Sodom. But confronted by the gang of men who want to do something grossly immoral and wicked, and Lot knows that it is. He is able to discern good from evil because he is about to tell these men, "Don't do wickedly to my guest." But it's a strange moral compromise that Lot is about to make while defending these two men. So in the defense of Christianity, he is also willing to make a moral compromise on what he knows is wrong. And you just read this and say, what is wrong with this picture? Why would someone be willing to compromise their morals in order to defend something that they know is right? Why is the church willing to compromise on morals or compromise on, move toward the world in order to defend, something that they know is right? Why are they willing to, why is the church willing to say, we know that, we know that worldly things aren't right, but we're going to let worldly things, into the church in order to get more attendance, that in the hope that more people will come to the knowledge of the saving knowledge of the gospel You know, so we're gonna compromise with the world. We're gonna compromise with this, and you know, where does that begin and where does it end? More importantly, so here you see this moral compromise begin, I suppose. And if there's a real place in the Bible where you see the compromise beginning, where someone who has moral fortitude, but then they say, well, let's compromise with the world. And this is where it starts, right here, I suppose, if you can place a finger anywhere. And Lot is just there's millions of Lots in churches all over the world. I mean, if I were to identify, I suppose, myself with, if I had to pick myself, you know, am I an Abraham or a Lot? I would have to say most of us are more like Lot than Abraham. Because Abraham, you know, he was not a compromiser for the most part, but Lot is. But Lot is, you know, and if you really sit down and say to yourself, do I compromise with the world in many things? Yeah, most of us do. Most of us do. What you're going to find out is Lot has never rebuked the sin of homosexuality that is going on rampant in the city, all around him. And although the Bible doesn't say why, we can make some assumptions. To this point, it hasn't really affected his family. It hasn't hurt his family. So, you know, just like people today, well, as long as it doesn't hurt my family, what you do in your own bedroom is your own business. Isn't that right? What people do in their own bedroom is their own business, as long as it doesn't affect me. Isn't that the moral the moral stance that most people take? And that's the moral stance that Lot's been taking for 20 years, basically, that he's lived at Sodom. And now, Lot is fixing to teach a lesson to his two daughters that live with him. A good lesson, as a matter of fact, and that lesson is they can have sex with anyone as long as it's heterosexual sex. And it's okay to compromise your moral standards in an emergency. If the situation fits, then it's okay to compromise your moral standards. Heterosexual sex with anyone is okay, and compromise your moral standards in an emergency, and you'll see how that all works out in the end. But Lot does defend his house guests from the desires of the crowd. So in Genesis 19:6, Lot went out at the door unto them, and shut the door after him. So he walks, he goes out of the house and closes the door behind him, and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. So what he says is, you have wickedness and wicked intentions in your mind. I know what you want to do to these men, and I don't want you to do that. Behold now, here's where Lot makes the compromise. I have two daughters which have not known man. In other words, they're both virgins. They've never had sex. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and ye do to them as is good in your eyes. In other words, you can gang rape my two daughters. Only unto these men do nothing. For therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. And he's about to get Father of the Year award for that. What a lesson he's teaching his daughters. So because Lot has never said anything against homosexuality in the 20 years that he's lived in Sodom, amongst all the gays, and amongst all the debauchery, and amongst all the sin that's been going on all around him, and he's never said anything about it, obviously, because we find out what's the homosexual contingent say to him They say, verse 9, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came into sojourn. They're talking about Lot. And he will needs be a judge. Now we will deal worse with thee than with them. In other words, now you judge us after this long time? After 20 years, you're going to call us wicked? Now we're going to deal with you more harshly than the men inside. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. So they're pushing Lot up against the door, and they're going to break the door down. But the men, the two angels inside, put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut the door. So Lot saved just in the nick of time. They pull him into the house and they slam the door shut. Verse 11, and they smote the men, the two angels, they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. A miracle of God. Now, if you go around talking about your faith to people, letting people know about God, in your daily conversation with people, just on a regular basis, if God comes up in the conversation, if you sit down at a meal and pray, and people see you pray before you eat, if you talk about going to church on Sunday, if you talk about your faith in Jesus Christ, these things on a regular basis, it doesn't have to be everything out of your mouth, but if people around you know that you're a Christian, when you say something about your faith or you say something about God, it's not going to be a big surprise to them, is it, Mike? No. It would not be a big surprise to them. And they'd probably take you seriously, wouldn't they? Yeah, you'd hope so. You'd hope so. And they wouldn't think it's a big joke because they've heard you talk about God, they've heard you talk about Christ a million times. They know that you take it seriously, and they've heard you talk about it, and they know that to you it's a very serious subject. Well, here are the angels. The men, verse 12, said unto Lot, hast thou here any besides? Is there anybody in this city besides your wife and the two daughters that are in the house? Son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters, and whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. In other words, collect up all the people that are important to you. Why? Verse 13, for we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So, Lot, do you have anybody important to you? Get them. Go collect them up. And do it now. So, who does Lot say? Well, okay, your son-in-laws. Okay, I've got son-in-laws. So Lot went out, verse 14, and spake unto his sons-in-law, more than one, which married his daughters. Not the daughters, the two that were living in the house, because they were still virgins. So he had other daughters. And said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. In other words, they thought he was joking. They didn't take him seriously. And so they, get out of here. What do we know about Lot in his conversation with his son-in-laws and with his daughters that were married to him? He never spoke about his faith. He never spoke about God. He never spoke about any of those things because they didn't take him seriously. It was just a big joke. So now they won't come. So now they won't come. So they're sitting at their house, and the time for judgment is drawing very near. And as it turns out, no one ever in the history of the Bible has ever resisted being saved as much as Lot. I mean, Mike, you think you have a hard time downtown when you give people the gospel and they resist the word of God? No one in the history of the Bible has ever resisted being saved any more than Lot. I mean, here is a guy who drug his feet leaving the city, and I mean literally, he was drugged out of the city, knowing that God was going to destroy the city. And the Bible doesn't say why. We can just, you know, try to think of some reason. Maybe he was stalling for time, thinking that, well, if I stall for time, God, that'll delay the judgment, and you know, maybe I can get my son-in-laws and my daughters. Maybe he didn't really believe that God would destroy the city. You know, there's a lot of Christians who don't believe that God is ever going to destroy this earth, as we can read about in the entire New Testament, every book of the New Testament. It says God will judge this world, and it will be cooked like a burnt hamburger on the grill. Maybe we're dealing with a carnal Christian, basically. A very carnal Christian. One who's very attached to the world. He lived in Sodom. I don't think I could have existed. I don't think I could have walked into Sodom and spent 10 minutes there. But he lived there for 20 years. I mean, he lived there, was taken prisoner. Abraham had to go rescue him, and he moved back. That's how much he liked the place. So in his carnality, even though he was, Peter says he was a believer, this is a guy who was attached to the things of the world. He just loved the things of the world. I mean, he loved the world. And how many Christians do you know who are like that? They just love the things of the world. They don't want to die. They're not looking forward to meeting the Lord. They're just attacking. They're gasping for the last breath because they just don't want to leave.
Because he didn't know anymore. There was no one here to minister to him.
I
didn't believe that there was. He's the only guy.
I don't know. The Bible doesn't say, but he's just not like he's performing some evangelical ministry. No one knows he's even a believer. What are you waiting for, Lot? Come on. You know, if you're going to be Billy Graham, now's the time. But Genesis 19:15. When the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot. Hurry up! Saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. You're going to get burned up here, buddy. He was moving. And while he lingered, I mean, he's just moving as slow as he can. I mean, the nuke's already on the way. It's been launched. The men, the two angels, laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, and the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. So I don't know if that means that they drug him or they flew him out or what it was, but he did not leave willingly. They literally drug him out of town. And then, if that weren't enough, the two men, the angels, give him specific instructions. Specific instructions. So, We're going to drag you out of harm's way. Now they say, it came to pass, when they had brought him forth abroad, that he said, here's the angel giving Lot instructions. He says, escape for thy life. That would have been good enough for me. Okay, thank you. I'm out of here. But no, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. Now, who would not have followed those instructions with everything that had gone on to this point? Look for the nearest mountain and run. That would have been fine with me. But was it good for Lot? No. No, 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 no. Lot says unto them, I don't think so. Not so, my Lord. Don't think I really want to go to the mountain. I don't think they have beds on the mountain. I don't think there's a place, there's not a Howard Johnson there. No running water and electricity. But I hear that there's a town nearby with a nice bed and breakfast that they can put us up with. How about over there? Lot says unto them, oh, not so, my Lord. Behold, now thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life, and I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. So what he's telling this angel is, you just told me to go to the mountain, and then I'll be safe there. I'm telling you, I might die if I go to where you're telling me. You talk about arguing with God. Now, Abraham, remember the last chapter, when God was standing next to Abraham looking down on Sodom. And God tells Abraham, you know, I'm really planning on destroying that place. And Abraham knew that Lot lived down there. And said, God, how about if 50 righteous people live down there? What would you save it if there's 50? And God says, okay, I'll spare it if you find 50 people. He says, well, what about 45? And then the number keeps getting lower and lower and lower. But it was always about someone else. Abraham never had skin in the game. It was never about himself. He was bargaining with God for Sodom. He was trying to save a bunch of homosexual, wicked, unrighteous sinners for the sake of a few righteous people that might be living down there. And Abraham never would have benefited at all from any of it. The fact of the matter is, this is all land, the entire plain that all these cities of wicked people lived on, was all land that God had promised to give to Abraham. And all these wicked people, they were taking up space. Abraham, by all rights, if it had been you or me, we would have walked over there by God. God says, I'm fixing to destroy this. And he says, well, good deal. Clear it out. I was kind of wanting to build something over there. I was wondering how he was going to get rid of all that. But Abraham didn't do that. He intervened on behalf of not only the righteous, but the wicked. Here's Lot. And who's he concerned about? Himself. He's worried about his own skin. Verse 20, he says, behold now, the city is near to flee unto, and it is a little tiny one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. See, he wants to go to another city. Not having learned his lesson, he wants to go to another city. And he said unto him, this is the angel speaking, see, I have accepted thee. concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou come thither. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. So, off they go to the city of Zoar. God waits, because he can't do anything until they clear the plain and get into the city of Zoar. Now the sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But Lot's wife failed to follow the instructions. They were told not to turn around and look, but his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Probably steps away from entering into the city of Zoar, because God couldn't do anything until they reached the city. But she looked behind and became a pillar of salt. God is going to again destroy this world with fire. He promises that. A lot of Christians don't believe that. Remember in Matthew 24, amongst other places, there are specific instructions given to those to whom they apply. Verse 16, 17, and 18 says that when certain things happen, let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Not into another city, but into the mountains. And don't turn around to look. Don't go to the bank to get money. Don't go down in the kitchen to pack your lunch. Let him which is on the housetop not come back to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. Guess what's going to happen to those who don't follow those instructions? If somebody's out in the field and they say, "Oh, I see that the abomination of desolation has happened. I better go get a bag before I leave for the mountains." It's going to be too late. Because these instructions are here for a reason. And remember what we read last week. Sodom is in your Bible as an example. And it's an example of those things which are to come. And just as Lot's wife looked back on Sodom, she too is as an example of what not to do. Lot is an example of what not to do. Not to bargain with God. We're not to question the instructions. We're not to say, I like the mountains, but you know what? There's no Howard Johnson's. There's no Holiday Inn. There's no hotels up in the mountains. I sure would like to go over to the city because it seems safe over there. So I'll go there. Wrong destination. It's not, oh no, I just heard the news, so I better go down into the house to pack up a few possessions first. No, wrong answer. Wrong answer, because guess what the instructions are? Not to do that. So as they say, the devil's in the details. The devil is in the details. The instructions are clear and they're plain. And Sodom is an example for the learning. Meanwhile, Abraham sees the destruction that has taken place. And as we learn about Lot, it probably Sodom or Abraham's righteousness. Abraham's righteousness and his concern for Lot that was the determining factor of why God spared Lot and his family. Look at verse 27, 28, 29. Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and went up and toward all the land of the plain. And behold, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. Remember, James 5:16 says that the prayers of a righteous man availeth much. And Abraham, in fact, probably was a determining factor in that his concern for Lot probably swayed God in saving Lot. I understand that Abraham, in this case, is the intercessor. He is almost a type of Christ in the example. He's making intercession for the righteous in the midst of the wicked as he looks down on Sodom and Gomorrah and makes intercession for the few. And Lot, as flawed as he is certainly not dependent upon his works in any way, because his works are greatly flawed, and you can see that. And here's a man that was ready to offer his daughters as a sexual sacrifice to a mob of men, and certainly was no Billy Graham as far as evangelical efforts go. And so it certainly wasn't his works. But yet Peter calls him righteous Lot. So he had faith, and his righteousness came from something. He was a believer. And just as Abraham interceded on his behalf, of course, we have Christ who intercedes on our behalf also. So you need to understand the comparison that's made there and the example that is taught. Also understand that, you know, you can take Lot out of Sodom, but it's harder to get the Sodom out of Lot. Lot's in Zoar, and he then ends up fearing living in the city of Zoar. And he finally follows God's instruction and goes to live in the mountains. One wonders, as you read through this, why he didn't go to live with Abraham. Because Abraham was his uncle. Abraham was living, in a tent and with his great wealth and all the things that Abraham had. And plus, you know, Lot had two daughters. I'm certain that men would have been there that would have been suitable husbands for the daughters, and that would have been a good reunion, and I'm certain that that Abraham would have welcomed Lot back. And you know, and you read through this and you wonder why Lot didn't decide to return and go back to Abraham. Pride would have been one of the answers. Shame might have been one of the answers. Oftentimes when a Christian when somebody leaves the church and then fails, they're ashamed to come back. They're gone and then they feel ashamed to come back. But there should not be a shame felt. There should be, especially on the part of the church, there should be a joyous, it should be a time for joyous reunion. We as the body of Christ should be very glad for those who return back and even as family members, those who have left and then come back, and there should be a time for great joy and a time for reunion and time for healing and all those things. It's hard to know what exactly went through Lot's head and the reasons why he did what he did. But those situations exist today, unfortunately, in many lives. And often with the passage of time, it just grows harder and harder to make reconciliation the longer things go. The longer there's a separation. And obviously there was a separation between Abraham and Lot. And he felt like time had too much time had gone by, and that they were too far removed one from another. And that Abraham certainly would not approve of what Lot had done. And probably especially since after Abraham had come rescuing and Lot had then returned back to Sodom, Lot probably thought, well, Abraham would never accept me back, never take me back, and so he never tried. But I'm certain that was not the case. So you have to realize that Abraham never saw Lot again. And it's quite a shame that there's a lot of human tragedy, real life tragedy that goes on in the Bible. And it's no different than the things that go on in people's lives today, our lives today, in the relationships that we have with other people. So let's go ahead and finish up the chapter. Verse 30, Lot went up out of Zoar. So he leaves the city and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him. For he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. Unfortunately, the daughters were taught a tremendous lesson when the men were at the door trying to get the two angels to come out so that they could be raped. And Lot's reply was, "Take my two daughters and do with them what you will." Because what they learned was that in an emergency situation, moral standards don't apply. And anything goes if the circumstances are right. And as it turns out, they decided that the circumstances were right and that it was an emergency. Because while Lot figured that he was protecting the daughters by secluding them in a cave, the daughters looked at it as we were in an emergency situation and we're never going to get married. The seed of Lot is going to die out and we've got a problem. Starting in verse 31 here, the firstborn said unto the younger, "Our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve seed of our father." And they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. And she perceived, and he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, "Behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also, And go thou in and lie with him, that we may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he pursued not when she lay down, nor when she arose. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. So by deceit, an incestuous relationship by both of the daughters brings about children. And the children that were born of Lot, the two daughters, become nations that, although looked favorably on by God at particular times, Moab and Ammon, they also become nations that plague Abraham's descendants, which of course being the nation of Israel. And to the point where you find that the firstborn bear a son, verse 37, his name Moab, the same as the father of the Moabites unto this day. The younger, she bear a son, his name is Ben-Ammi, the same as the father of children of Ammon unto this day. And you find in Zephaniah 2:8-10 that God will destroy Moab and Ammon, besides other things, besides the Baal. They were Moabites were Baal worshippers and led Israel into the worship of Baal, and the Ammonites were worshippers of Molech, and led Israel into the worshiping of Molech and the sacrificing of children in the fires of Molech. But besides that, for their pride. In Zephaniah 2:8-10, it says, I have heard the reproach of Moab and the revilings of the children of Ammon, whereby they have reproached my people and magnified themselves against their border. Wherefore, as I live, saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, surely Moab shall be as Sodom, and the children of Ammon as Gomorrah, even the breeding of nettles, and salt pits in a perpetual desolation. The residue of my people shall spoil them, and the remnant of my people shall possess them. This shall they have for their pride, because they have reproached and magnified themselves against the people of the Lord of hosts. So, in the end, they will get the same as Sodom and Gomorrah. So you see the end, or the means does not justify what happens in the end. So unfortunately, the carnal Christian Lot, the carnal believer Lot, you can see the bad decisions that were made, and then the poor ending that comes about through all the bad decisions.